Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help. When I was young, was so much young.
Hello and welcome to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and all the way over at the Lakeside studio. George P. Fraser, a man who has an authentic picture of Bigfoot. And the reason he knows it's authentic, because it's a low-resolution image that is grainy and slightly out of focus.
And I paid a lot of money for it.
No, that's why I know it's authentic.
It's authenticated.
Yeah.
The guy who sold it to me authenticated it. Yeah.
I know,
yeah.
That, which is what makes it so incredibly valuable. So
yeah.
Yeah, you're kind of a collector, a little bit eccentric. I like that about you.
Well, you know, it's worked so far sometimes.
Yeah, no, I agree. So George, here we are, Real Recovery, one more night. I'm looking forward to this. Our special guest, Jim Althoff, is going to be joining us in just a few minutes, time permitting, of course. And also, it depends on how well we do up front here. But I know at Real Recovery, we always like to cover a step in the program. So I think we're going to look at step four tonight.
Well, why don't you set us up on that? Ooh. And I'll bring it home.
Didn't I just set us up? Do you want me to?
Oh, you did.
Yeah,
okay.
Why don't you then tell us what step four is?
Well, it's made of fearless, a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And I invert searching and fearless sometimes. So if I did again, sorry. But what we started talking about last week was after we make a decision, and in the first three steps, I can't do it, he can do it, I'm going to let him. We say a prayer of the third step prayer, and there's no amen after that because we're going to do the work. And really what we're getting at here is we need to get down to causes and conditions. We look at our resentments and we look at our fears. And we started talking about this last week out of Matthew 7:21, Bill, about Jesus saying, "Get away from me, I never knew you." Which for me, when I read it in a Bible study last week, that tapped into my fears.
Mm.
Is he talking about me? And we spent some time on that, and not to get into any debate about whether or not you're saved, but I think even if you are, you will have that be very sobering. I heard somebody else on your show in the afternoon this week talking about that verse, and he said that when he read it. I forget who it was, but he's a minister, and it was very sobering, and it is. But I want to look at the Ten Commandments and say, how am I doing on those? Because what I think we can do, Bill, is we can focus on that we're not doing our behavior anymore, an outward manifestation that started by an inward change. But really, how is our heart? Are we fearful? Are we resentful? And we need to go to God with this. And I wanted to read a little bit out of the Big Blue Recovery book because I really like this. And it says, we never apologize to anyone for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, it's the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. Key thing here, the prayer. We have a resentment prayer, as we talked about last week, and we have a fear prayer. If you're listening tonight and you're going in and out of recovery, or maybe you're going in and out of your walk as far as maintaining victory over some sinful action, behavior, thought that you have, maybe the key is to start praying first thing in the morning. Upon awakening, turning your thoughts to God and what he would have you do today, not what you're going to get from him. And I think the constant contact, Bill, of being in a prayerful communion with the living God that happens through Jesus and the Holy Spirit is the only way to do this, the only way to change, to have your heart change. It's interesting to me in that verse, in 7:21, get away from me. I never knew you. Mm-hmm. There's no relationship there. I want to cultivate the relationship. What say you?
Well, I think we talked about that, and people who are outside of the family of God, even if they have presented themselves as religious but have not had a personal commitment, believed in the name of the Lord Jesus and been saved, they've been regenerated by the Holy Spirit. If that has not happened, they're outside of God's family. And although Jesus intended those words for the Pharisees, away from me, I never knew you, that will never be said to a believer.
Well, right. But I also think that, you know, the Pharisees thought they were okay, right?
They
did. Because they were casting out demons and healing. And,
yes.
And so for me, Jesus said that if you love me, you'll keep my commands.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to pray for the willingness to do that. I need to pray for the assurance that I'm walking with him, but the guidance of what would you have me do today? We talk a lot about on this show that God doesn't save us without a job for us. And when we look at things that we have messed up, we look at sins that we've committed. But when we start growing along spiritual lines and, you know, getting into the consecration process of being more like Christ and having doing what he wants us to do, what aren't we doing that we could do? God opened my eyes to the needs of other people. And somebody after our last show, I think it was Angela, said that you talked about at the end of the book of Matthew about you gave me a drink of water, Jesus said. You know, when did we do that? Well, we help other people. And that really got me thinking about this, Bill. It starts off in our walk that we're free from sin and condemnation. And then we get to carry the message. And in the recovery stories on our show, invariably the people who maintain their sobriety and their walk with God share what was done for them by God and other people. And you can't keep it unless you give it away, but you can't give away something you don't have, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really what was on my head and heart this week is moving forward, pressing out towards the goal, as Christ or as Paul talks about, getting to know Christ better and be more Christ-like in all you think and do. And it's real hard to do that when you're afraid. But when you're afraid, you can pray, hey, God, remove this fear from me. So strengthen me so I can remind myself of what you've done for me and the power you've given to work for you. And go from there. But I think that constant contact and prayer when in doubt or fearful or the enemy, the arrows from Satan in Ephesians, that you're a loser, you can't do this, oh, you've really messed it up now. I think we need to go to God right away on that because of ourselves, we can't fight that.
Mm-hmm. I love your encouragement to hit the floor with prayer first thing in the morning. In Lamentations chapter 2, it says, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness.
It's a great, I love that.
Great reminder. Yeah. So there's another verse which I love, and we're coming up against the break here, so hopefully I can find it here real quick. But I also think it's in Lamentations as well. But
no pressure.
No, I feel some. I actually feel a lot of
shot pressure. Clack, shot clack.
Yeah, you're not helping right now, just so you know. But I probably can't find it now because the pressure is too great. But
you should have prayed.
I should have. But anyway, we are so glad you're listening to Real Recovery tonight, and we don't know how you found your way here. Maybe a friend or a family member recommended, or maybe you've listened for years. But either way, we're really glad that you're listening tonight because stories are transformational, and you're going to hear one tonight from Jim, our special guest. And if you are in the grip of an addiction and you know it, God is getting your attention. Tonight he's knocking on your door and saying, listen to the words that are coming ahead and be prepared to open your heart to me. I think that's the message of Real Recovery tonight. George, we're going to take our little break, and then when we come back, we're going to bring on Jim, our special guest. So you're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. If you want to go to our show page, you go to myfaithradio.com, go go over to Real Recovery. You can see all kinds of past interviews and episodes that we've done. We are now moving into our, I think, 11th year coming up in March. So we're excited about that. Thanks for being so wonderful, supporting Faith Radio and listening to George and I. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, so glad you're joining us tonight. We've got a great opportunity to once again hear an incredible story of transformation, George. I'm looking forward to this one. There's some hometown roots in this one, so that always raises the stakes a little bit for us, doesn't it?
Well, another guy from the promised land, Bill, and those are always good. So, yeah, let's get to it.
Yeah. Our guest tonight is Jim Althoff. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, we are glad you joined us. Now, we want to get to know you a little bit, so maybe get us started with your life growing up and some of the things that you got started with as a younger kid.
You bet. Well, like I think you were referring to, George, the Promised Land, was born over in Edina. I was actually like the second year of the South, Fairview Southdale. I came along, and then into a family of six. I was the youngest. Funny, because my mom would say it was a five-year gap between me and my older brother, and my mom would say that I was jokingly that I was a product of a Spice Up Your Marriage conference at the Catholic Church at St. Pat's. So that was, I don't know if that played into my addictions later or not. It was always great cocktail party joke that she would tell. But and that was, you know, overall pretty good. I mean, it was a big separation kind of between me and the older siblings. They're all kind of always on something else. And then as I got kind of starting to get acclimated, starting to feel a little bit more, I had some abuse as a younger child with some kids that abused me in the neighborhood there, which was a central part of my addiction too later on. But then about 4 years later, when I started to feel a little bit okay about myself, we moved. We picked up my dad. His business struggled up here. He was a drywall contractor. And we picked up and moved down to Naples, Florida, out of nowhere. Remember, I came up to my parents the one night going, and where everyone was home. At my house, and they all lived different places, going to school and so on. I was like, I don't know what everybody's doing here. And they said, hey, we got a question for you. Want to move to Florida? And I'm like, wow, yeah, that'd be great. Well, about 3 weeks later, we were packing. I'm like, where are we going? It's like, we're moving to Florida, remember? I'm like, you were serious? But it was kind of traumatic. Actually, it was halfway through my sixth grade year, and it was just me and my parents. My brother was there for about 6 months. And he graduated and moved on. And then my parents were having some struggling times throughout that time. So I was kind of ended up being a referee through my high school years and so on. And fitting in pretty well, but I was very much a kind of the class clown kind of guy. I played sports, loved football, and was a bigger guy and was always loving that. But, you know, then about sophomore, junior years where I started to actually found some marijuana that my brother had left at the house. And that kind of kicked things off. And then we started experimenting with alcohol. And I really started feeling an affinity for those two drugs. And it went pretty well through high school. I mean, I was more of a binge drinker. But going off to college, I went off to came back up here to St. John's. Up in Collegeville, actually, and I did real good for the first year, and then something happened over that summer, and things went downhill, and really started to use marijuana and alcohol addictively, and ended up failing out miserably from St. John's. That was in '86, and then it was a real spiral downward for the next 6-7 years or so.
What was your contact with God? Were you raised Catholic, and did you stick with that? Or
yes, I did. You know, we were a very Catholic family. My mom and dad were Eucharistic ministers up at St. Pat's there, and And my dad was a lector, and I was an altar boy, of course, growing up. They had, my parents were involved in something called Marriage Encounter, which was they were would go and do these retreats and stuff, and were but we always had priests and people around the house. They had some really good friends, some great people, actually, like Father Aidan McCall was the one-time president of St. John's, was a friend when I was growing up, and other great guys. I had a pretty good overall feeling for it, but it was very surface kind of relationship. I really, felt like it was more punitive than relational. So I kind of saw the big, God up there with the beard and the taser, and he's up there trying to keep us in line. It was kind of my take on it. I reached out many times, kind of trying to figure it out, but I didn't seem to go very deep.
Jim, it seems like St. John's, you're at a great college, you're at a great university, and you've got your whole future ahead of you. Was there a lot of distractions in terms of social life there, or did you just sort of wander into more drug and alcohol use because it was kind of what you wanted to do?
Yeah, I think it was that summer I came back. I actually did really well in my first year, surprisingly. The reason I got into St. John's, I don't even know if he's alive still, but I think was just because Father Aidan McCall got me in. I don't think I had a high C average. I don't think that's about what really gets into St. John's normally. But but I went up and I had a 3.5 average my freshman year. Was very excited, and I actually got involved. I had been in high school too in theater, and I really liked it. And I got in with this theater group. I actually got the third lead in this big production up at the St. Ben's, St. John's play, and was kind of a big deal. It was really exciting, and came back. I'm like, you know what? I think I want to be a theater major. And I think my parents are still in their grave laughing about that one. They were like, what are you, crazy? We're not sending you to St. John's to do that. And I don't know, something, it was immature. I just kind of clicked in me that summer, and I was, I started on a real downward spiral. Then when I got back up there for the next year, I joined the rugby team, quit football, joined rugby, and decided to party. And that's basically all I did. I actually went from a 3.5 average after my freshman year, my first semester, my sophomore year, I had a 0.2 average. I had two withdrawals or one withdrawal fail and a D. Two withdrawals, a fail, and a D. So it was obviously on academic probation. I had moved off campus and just decided I wanted to party is really what I wanted to do. And I just felt really uncomfortable just with myself still in a lot of ways, just couldn't fit in, I always felt like I was missing something. There was some little piece of me that wasn't, like I missed a week of school or something, that everybody else seemed to get it and how to be at peace and how to get their life together and do what they needed to do. And I just could not figure that out.
What got George and I into college was exact change. George, did you have any academic probation? You want to share your story?
Well, I'm still stuck on his. I think at 3.5, Jim was a little too much studying there the first time, but you overcorrected. I think your question, Bill, why did you do it? It's college, right?
I get that.
From home.
I get that.
And getting high and drinking is fun at first.
Yeah.
And then you're trapped. But I really wanted to talk about that missing piece, Jim. You articulated so well, like everybody else knows something. There was that song by Pink Floyd, You Missed the Starting Gun. Mm-hmm. That's kind of it.
Yep.
And we don't know what it is, but we do know we're lacking that. And so we try to find other things to fill it, right?
Yeah. And it, not thinking about that and not thinking about the discomfort, made it obviously more palatable at first, but then the consequences start rolling in, and that's where the brakes start tapping the brakes a little bit, right?
So did you leave school and decide to work for a while? Is that what you did?
Yeah, I did. I think I ended up getting like a D+ in my second. I was on academic probation, and then they kindly asked me not to return in my junior year. And I came down to the cities, and a friend of mine that I had met through a guy at St. John's was down here selling cable TV door to door. This was in 86, 87 when it was really hot, and up at Cable TV North Central in Roseville. And he got me this job, and it was probably a bad idea. It was paid very well. Still one of the most lucrative jobs I ever had. For about 4 hours worth of work a day, we had to go in at like 4 PM till about 8. We'd walk around, knock on doors, take orders, and made, $1,500 to $2,000 a week. And then we're off, and it was just a bunch of younger people partying. And it just got out of hand. I was living in Burnsville, my sister's basement, Nancy's, actually. My sister, we talked about before the show. And then driving to Roseville every day, and I would just get, we'd go out afterwards, get completely obliterated, and I'd drive that long trip back from Roseville down 35W, and it was really dark, dark time.
Were you still going to church every week?
No, I wasn't. I really fell away. Probably more when I went up to St. John's. I mean, we had, I was one of those things where I knew it was a calling that was always happening, and I found out later that, God never gave up on me and would kept kind of, was patiently helping me find my way back. But no. And as I got deeper into it, I wanted nothing to do with it. Not consciously, like I was trying to stay away from it, but it just, I didn't want to go there. I was embarrassed and felt like I had let God down, kind of.
When did you get to where you thought you had a problem?
Yeah, Georgia, we're going to probably ask Jim to hold on to that answer. It's a great question, but we are up against a break now. So we're going to take a short one. When we come back, we're going to continue our talk with Jim. Our special guest tonight on Real Recovery, Bill and George, we're so glad you've joined us. We'll take a very short break and be right back.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, we were talking to Jim Althoff tonight, hearing quite a story. George, you had a great question right before we went to break, which is just like you to ask good questions. I think it was something about, when did you realize you had a problem? But I'll let you ask it.
Normally I can forget them over the break, but that was it. When did you realize you had a problem? At this point, were you going, hey, maybe this isn't good, huh?
Yeah, it was shortly after that. Actually, now you lost me. I want to go back to the CeeLo Green. Can we do that? Little Gnarls Barkley, that's a great, one of my favorite songs. I love that. And it's very pertinent.
We aim to please.
It was right after this. I got in trouble pretty quickly with, even though I was making all this money, financial difficulties, and was just kind of losing it. I did not get any tickets or anything up here, but then I went back to Naples to visit, and I got a DUI down there.
Ouch.
And that was my first one. That was in 87, 88, and I was, actually 88. And so it was a big deal, and then I was kind of forced to move down there. My parents knew that I was, my sister is seeing frontline view of this wreckage kind of happening and sleeping all day, and she wasn't happy, but she's very sweet. I can't even imagine she let me live there. She had three young kids and her husband, and I was just kind of ugly to look at. It was pretty bad. I didn't know I had a problem, though. I didn't think. I thought I was just young and wanted to party, and that's what was fun. But then after the first DUI, I showed up there for the classes and so on saying, look at this guy and look at that person. And oh my gosh, there's a hot mess. And, and nothing really sunk in for me at all. With that, I really just thought it was the circumstances around the DUI were kind of funny, and I just thought it was, you know, lightning struck at wrong place, wrong time. And that wasn't me, and I could control it. It wasn't that big of a deal. But then I got a couple of possession charges over the next year. I got into bartending, which I thought after my first DUI, I tried to figure out what might be a good career choice. And I thought, you know what? Bartending would be great. Some of the great reasoning that was going through my mind. So I did. I became a bartender and started making a bunch of money doing that again. And now over that period, I traveled. I went to seasonally up to Nantucket Island for two summers and Maui, Hawaii for Lahaina for two winters. And, doesn't it sound beautiful? And it's great to tell my guys I work with now about that. I go, doesn't that sound fun? They're like, wow, like the worst 2 years of my life. I was a real mess, and I didn't have a car, so I thought I was doing great because I haven't had a DUI in 2 years, and a friend of mine pointed out that I didn't have a car either, and I never drove anywhere, so that might have been the reason. But it was really bad. I started getting into other drugs. Ecstasy was starting to become a big thing at that time, and I always never liked cocaine at all. I was always kind of drew the line at that, but I pushed the envelope on that too and gave up that boundary, and it was really bad. Things were getting pretty ugly. And then my mom actually got sick. She needed a bypass. And so I decided to, I needed to go back to Naples. I was going to stay in Hawaii, and it's a great thing I didn't. God was watching out after me. And so I went back to Naples because I was worried about my mom, and I got my second DUI then in July of 92, and that's where it all kind of happened for me.
So we're hitting rock bottom at this point, it sounds like, Jim.
Yeah, oh, definitely, and that was where I came back to living in a house. I rented this really cruddy house from my parents and came back after I got bailed out of jail and was at the end. I knew the only thing that sunk in after the first DUI was what the penalties were if I got another one within 5 years. And it was about 4.5 years. And I knew I was in big trouble. I knew I was going to lose my license for 5 years. Minimum, they had minimum mandatory sentencing there, and I just, wow, what am I going to do? Now I'm 27, almost 28, and I'm here. I am going to lose my license for 5 years. I'll be in my 30s before I can drive again. And it was just the worst day of my life. I sat there, this is the day after I got bailed out, and I sat in my house, and I actually was the first day I really contemplated suicide. I just knew there was no way I could ever be sober or figure out how to not drink, and I had no life, of course, besides that. And so I cried out to God. I started looking at the knives in the drawer at one point, and like, I wonder how I would do it if I did kill myself. And I started crying out to God, just mad, really. I was screaming at him, like, I thought you were this loving God, and why are you letting this happen to my life? And what's going on? I want to die. This is horrible. It's the worst day of my life, worst day of my life, worst day of my life. Rock bottom, like you said. And suddenly, I was in my bedroom, sitting on my bed, looking into my open closet kind of across from me. And there was a box in there from my grandmother, who was this beautiful spiritual, Norman Rockwell, Grandma Rita, you know, with the big house coat and the lunch lady arms and the Coke bottle glasses. And she was just the sweetest thing ever. And we'd go and visit her in Chicago a couple times a year. And she had died 6 months before that. And I had a box of stuff since it was my parents' house. They're like, here, I got to store this. They had a condo, so they wanted to store it in my house. So it was in there, and there was a Bible sitting on top of it. And I reached up and I grabbed that Bible. And it was funny, those old, had that old, like, brown duct tape kind of tape that they used to have to hold the cover on. And I opened it up, and this prayer fell out and hit me in the chest. And I'm like, oh, I wonder what this is. And I set this big Bible down. And I opened it up, and it was a prayer from actually 1513 A.D., which was from a Father Giovanni. And it read, I don't know if you want me to share it with you. You want to hear it? But it said, there's nothing I can give you which you have not. And there's much, but yet there's much, very much, that while I cannot give it, you can take. No heaven can come to us unless our hearts find rest in today. Take heaven, and no peace lies in the future, which is not hidden in this present instant. It goes on from there, but those words just sunk into my heart. And just like I said before, this thing that was missing, Jesus reached out to me and just said, there's nothing missing. You know, I've been with you since you were a little kid. And you prayed, you know, and professed your faith in me when you were a little scared little guy. And I've never left your side this whole time. And you don't need anything. You have every bit of the grace and peace that you need to go forward. And I, to be able to contemplate that at the time, you know, I tell people sometimes the miracle of what I believe happened in that moment. And they're like, oh, yeah, great. Sounds like a miracle. It's like, it wasn't a lightning bolt. It wasn't an apparition or anything like that. But it was definitely a miracle. I suddenly, the thought of the worst day of my life, worst day of my life, worst day of my life, turned into, what if this is the best day of your life? And it was a great, Jesus had a great point. You know, what if this is where it turns around? What if this is how I figure it out? What if this is where I grow up and step into to my life and get rid of this stuff? And so that's what happened. I ended up on my face for the whole night, just in this whole kind of new high of the Spirit just pouring through me and writing and praying. And I was so excited. I remember at one point I heard in the other room, I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. And I was like, oh, it's like I just felt God just so there, and just I was going to be fine. I was going to be fine. And it's funny, my dad came over the next morning, who's, you know, of course, going, oh, my gosh, you really screwed up this time. You know, what are we going to do now? And I'm like, no, no, Dad, no, I'm going to be okay. I had this spiritual experience last night. He's like, oh, yeah, sure you did. You know, whatever. I'd like to see how you're going to pay these fines and whatnot. The one thing I'd asked God for the night before, because I didn't know what I was going to do from there, but I knew I needed to stay sober from there, was to show me a sign. And my dad showed up. He goes, I don't know what this is, but I got a letter from this guy who works at Mom's office. And he gave me this letter, and it was from a guy who reached out. His name's Jay Smith. And he said, I've been sober 2 years. I work at your mom's office. I've never met you. But if you want to know how I did it, I'm up at the office all day. I'd love to talk to you. And I was just like, couldn't push by him fast enough to run up. There was like 2 blocks away, and sat down with him. And he said, you know, hey, this is how I did it. I went to AA, and God, you know, found God through it, and it helped me. And I said, well, great, let's go to a meeting. And he said, we're not going to a meeting. You're going to go to a meeting. He goes, then we'll go to a meeting, but you got to go to your first one by yourself. And I stepped in there and just walked into this noon meeting down in Naples, Florida, where average age was in late 70s, and I was 27, almost 28. And those feelings of, you know, those old, you know, I'm not like these people kind of thing started sneaking in. And these guys were so sweet, and they sat me down and said, okay, we're going to do a first step meeting since Jim's here. And started telling me their story. And I literally ended up sitting on the floor by the time it was done, and about the fourth guy was sharing his story and crying on some guy's leg I'd never met. just as he patted my head saying, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. I was just such a beautiful thing. I was just like, wow, this, I do belong here. Obviously, it doesn't matter how old you are. I can completely relate with these guys, and who felt alone and felt like they didn't fit in, and got to drinking, so it caused them huge problems. And so I really fell in love with the program. And
wow, that's great. A fantastic part of the story, Jim. We're going to pick up after the break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. After a short break, we'll be back with our special guest, Jim. All right, Bill and George are back. We've got a fantastic story going on here, George. And step one seems to be very pivotal when he stepped into a meeting and cried like a baby. I think that's the work of the Holy Spirit in his life.
Oh, there's no question how this is set up. You get a letter from some guy that works with your mom, mm-hmm. and then you wonder if God is in this.
The next morning?
Yeah.
Yeah. No further questions, Your Honor.
Great story. Well, you know, and I think the Spirit not only convicts you that it's a good idea, he gives you the strength to go, and you win.
Yep. It was amazing. And it all, I just like the stars, it was so obvious that God was involved that it was, you know, it's impossible to deny. It was such an amazing time. And though that started out a really connection to the home group, actually, where this gentleman went, a different one from where I went the first day, but it was great. And for 5 straight years, just about, I was, you know, 4 to 5 times a week until I moved away, going to meetings there and staying sober was wasn't difficult. I really did get involved in the program, and that made a big difference. It's great.
You know, Jim, when you mentioned that you were in a meeting and they talked about step one, and of course that's, we admitted we were powerless over our addiction and compulsive behaviors and that our lives had become unmanageable. I think of Romans 7:18. I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my sinful nature, for I have the desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. Starting from that day, God gave you the strength to start carrying out something different, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. And that was that story. And it was, you know, that's such a, it's such a, an honor to be able to tell it, of course, but it's, it showed me over the years, you know, the power that's in that story for people that I get blessed to tell it to, but to myself as well, just affirming this Spirit of God, you know, how he reached out and what he did. So over the years, as I told that story, it's been, it's funny because I came full circle up to a few, so 5 years ago, and was on a trip with a guy, and with my kids, we were driving up to a camp up in northern Minnesota, and I looked over, and we were talking up front, and the kids were in back, and I've met the guy, and he started asking me about my story, and I told him basically the story I just told you guys, and I looked over at one point, and he was like tearing up. It was nighttime, and I could see him, and it was kind of what God just put on my heart at that moment, like, this isn't just some little offhand story you tell, you know. This is the power of God. This is the, you know, it's by the blood of the Lamb and the power of their testimony that they overcame. And this story has been a great part of what has healed you in this process, you know, has been your affirmation both of the Spirit of God and of that moment. And so I've learned that now as I got a chance to work with addicts and so on, that's how beautiful that is, that you, when you get your testimony, I call it, you know, that white light moment happens for some. It's also step 11 and 12, you know, having had a spiritual awakening, you know, planting your flag in that spiritual awakening is a big part of it too. Cause we have other moments, right? When you're addicts, it's, oh yeah, man, just get me out of this, God, just help me to, you know, not get the worst sentence here or not get pulled over today or whatever. And there are all these miracles that happen along the way, but we can easily kind of look over those. But, you know, when we're looking for that moment, for that spiritual awakening, when you find it, you know, give God glory and plant your flag in it. Don't let anybody take it away from you. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter what anybody else says from that point. It's it's yours. And things did change that day. You know, that's awesome.
I love that. I think, too, on the consequence part, and I'll qualify this, Jim, before I share it. I had two DWIs, too. And if you had hit somebody, you'd be getting out of prison about now.
Yeah.
Down in Florida, maybe not. but God's even protecting us when we're out running and gunning.
Mm-hmm.
So that when, you know, you get that prayer card falling, you realize you can get up. And there's not, you know, a body somewhere that you're in a prison for the rest of your life. And even when we're out there, he's protecting us. That's so touching to me about having the relationship since you were a little kid and God's there. That's perfect. I love that.
Yeah. No, and it was, I loved this story of Jesus. You know, I thought it was beautiful, and I knew that I loved so much about him. The truth was that I believed in him, but there was that sinful nature, you know, you talked about that, draws us to what the world tells us is fulfilling, and what our, you know, mental illness tells us is makes us feel better, and so on. It kind of draws us to that kind of light, moth to a light kind of thing, but it's not. It's a fake light. It's darkness, and that's where we, you know, God can shine His light in and turn it around in an instant. You know, and it's awesome.
Jim, what has God put in your path in terms of helping others now?
Yeah, so I ended up, about 8 years or so, I actually ended up kind of getting back into some other kind of immoral living, just things with, I wasn't unmarried and just kind of running around for a few years there. And in 2000 up here and where I live now, I wandered into a Bible-believing church and a different, my dad thought I was a heretic and, but he, like, what are you doing? What kind of church is, you know, named that or whatever? And, but it was amazing, kind of a second major experience. And over the time, I realized then that, you know, I was called to work with addicts, and that's what God has brought me to do. So I was able to go back to school back here in, it was in like 2015. Went back to Liberty University and finished an online degree there for addiction and recovery. Got my bachelor's and then did my postgraduate work to become a licensed alcohol and drug counselor. So it was that's what I do now. Get to work with a group of 16 guys, and you know, we meet 9 hours a week in groups. And it's an intensive outpatient with lodging setting, and it's just a blessing to be there. It's weird too. It is tough. You know, it can be tough work. There's lots of folks that don't make it, but there is many that do as well. And it's funny though, because you know you're in the right place when people would ask me, you know, like, what? How do you do it, man? It's got to be harder, and people are, you know, not doing well, and they leave and so on. I'm like, are you kidding? To me, it's like this amazing gift to be able to be that person that's there at that moment. You know, there's a great quote by English. What do you call it? You know, the guy who's missionary. Sorry. And he says, "There's I don't want to live within the sound of church and chapel bell. I want to run a rescue shop within a yard of hell." And that's kind of my experience of being at this low point in seeing this darkness as the extent that I did, that it's an honor to be called by God to be able to stand right there on the edge of hell.
That sounds
saying,
like
not today,
Booth.
Devil. Not today.
Sounds like Booth of the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
You know that, but that's what you were created to do.
Yeah. Amen. And it's really been a joy.
We always say on this show that God doesn't save us from our addictions without having a job for us to do. And I'm glad you're doing that, because you show people how to get out just like you did.
Yep. And just being, being able to, is really giving hope here. Jesus is the, you know, the answer is there is hope, that there is, that it's not the end. It's that last moment you think it's over is actually where he's standing right there ready to have you just reach out and knocking on the door like we know he is. And to be able to help people to see this beautiful Savior that we have and meet him, let him meet them where they are is really a gift. Just mm-hmm. a great thing to be able to do.
Jim, we only have 2 minutes left, but maybe a word of encouragement and hope for someone who's listening tonight that's maybe in a crisis right now.
Yeah. I love one of the reasons why I got into the business was a wonderful verse out of John where there was Pilate asks Jesus, so you're the king of the Jews? And he says, well, that's what you say I am, but actually the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. And the truth might seem like, been overused as a spiritual term, but it's really just the way things really are. You know, you see it your way, I see it mine, and God just sees it, And so as you're, wandering around, wondering what to do, you got to, keep in mind that there's some lies that you've believed about yourself to be true. It's the basis of deception, And so to be able to clear your mind for a period and to start, experiencing some truth, you need some help. And mm-hmm. And that's why there's places to go, and there's wonderful help available, especially nowadays. They're really kind of realizing that the whole punitive approach to dealing with addiction is not such a great idea. That if people are addicts, they don't need jail, they need treatment. And so it's available out there for you, and just go with it. And the biggest thing you have, you wonder, how am I going to succeed? What if I don't? What if I fail? What I see as a counselor, the greatest thing you need is willingness. They call it in the big book, the key of willingness. Mm-hmm. Showing up with an open mind and just let's see God at work, and take coincidence outside and kick its butt. Yep. And say, I'm just going to give 6-8 weeks here of time to see if God shows me that he's real and that he can help. And I assure you, you'll be blown away.
Great word of encouragement, Jim. Thank you so much for being our guest tonight on Real Recovery. That is all the time we have left for tonight. It went so fast. Bill and George are inviting you to show up next week, same time, same place. We'll look forward to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Have a great night, everyone. See you next week. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.